You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
Without further ado, we've got to bring in my co-host on Oddball, live from New York. It's Charlotte Wilder. And this interview is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Charlotte, you asked me what I wanted to talk about, and I said, oh, I wonder what happened last night that I'd like to talk about with Charlotte Wilder specifically. The Hawks, not a great matchup for the Celtics. What's going on?
I don't know. Why are they the only team that has beat the Celtics twice? Like, what? My nightmare is that the Celtics meet the Hawks in the first round of the playoffs and the Hawks go up like 2-1 on the Celtics. And then it's just, and the Celtics just start mentally unraveling because something happens at the end of these games where like it all falls apart, which is an insane thing to say about the best team in the league that has already clinched the number one spot. Also, we're just watching the starting lineup out there and every play I'm like, don't get hurt. Oh my God, the ankles, like Porzingis, he fell. It was the most stressful game I've watched all season.
Charlotte, this is weird to me and I need you to explain it to me. The Celtics have the best record in the league. They have one of the best net ratings in the history of basketball. They have the best offense in the history of basketball. And yet, there is zero air of invincibility about them. And I'm not just talking about the rest of the league, the rest of basketball. Even Celtics fans like yourself, I get the feeling you guys aren't 100% bought in and confident in what's happening.
Yeah, and honestly, this is one of those intangible things in sports that I'm having trouble understanding. And I've had trouble understanding it all season because I feel like, I mean, especially on Oddball, you know, the Celtics have been great, obviously. They've been the best. But then they'll lose, and I get way more nervous than I should. And then I feel bad about it because I'm like, well, obviously teams are allowed to lose. Like, that's an insane thing. But then I'm like, why does this make me so nervous? There's something about them. They're like a little quiet. They're sort of a quiet team in a way where I'm like, I would like a little more, like...
You need some Marcus Smart in your life.
Grandstand a little bit. What?
You're missing some Marcus Smart,
Marcus,
right?
I miss him so much.
Does that dude even exist anymore? Yeah, I mean, he got traded to another galaxy.
Yeah, to another multiverse.
He's just not at all relevant. He went from being a central figure to what was happening in the NBA, the most colorful member of a contender. And now I haven't thought about him like all season until just now when you mentioned him.
Charlotte's thought about him.
I think about him every single day.
this is,
and it's not that like the South, yeah, they're better without him, but I miss that. There's no one. There really isn't that. They're all just sort of calm and like they lose and they're like murr, murr, and they win and they're like murr, murr, and I'm like, what's going on in here?
Now, Charlotte, let me ask you a question.
The best bit of analysis I've heard this season so far about the Celtics.
Thank you.
All while they have a psycho at the helm.
So before we get to the psycho at the helm, Charlotte, I want you to explain something to the national audience that may not know this. If you don't listen to Oddball or watch Oddball, remember, it's every day but Mondays. Charlotte, you are married to an avid, rabid Knicks fan, Tyler, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It would seem to me, despite the Celtics having a historic season, Tyler is more happy with his Knicks fandom this year than you are with your Celtics fandom.
100%. I mean, I was thinking about this on the way to the studio, where I was like, being a Knicks fan right now is this kind of, they're in the sweet spot of like the most romantic place you can be as a sports fan, where your team has sucked, your team has been so bad, and then all of a sudden, your team is good to the point that you're nervous to talk about it, but they're so easy to root for because they have this, they're gritty, they have Jalen Brunson, they show a lot of emotion, Josh Hart is out there doing crazy things, and as a Celtics fan, it's almost like I'm just standing at the top of a building, like worried someone's going to push me off, and if they don't, then I guess like we won.
That's not a fun place to be, where all the pressure. Mike, no. Did you feel like that when Miami was at its peak with LeBron, and Wade, and Bosh?
What there is nothing in my sports fandom that has ever felt like the entire Heat experience was, where every game mattered, every little drama mattered, every critique that was out there from the most obscure of beat writers would become living rent-free in your head and just the main focus. Like, you would wake up hoping that this beat writer from Indiana was having a terrible day, just an awful day, and that every result meant all the world. It was not a rational place, and it has since become what I grade everything in sports against for me.
That's the pinnacle.
Yeah, in terms of emotion, investment, because yeah. It was just such a wild time, and it just everybody really legitimately hated you. Not this concocted media hate. People doubted us. Nobody wanted to see us here. It really felt like the entire world was against Miami at that point.
But you guys were also winning championships.
Only
not like a first.
A huge
not a first.
No, they won two in the middle, lost the first one, lost the last one.
Mike, you spent two seasons, the better part of two seasons, not having a payoff. Like, it happened at the end of the second season where they won the championship.
Yeah, I can't really believe it was only 4 years. It was such a small portion of time. And because you were just so emotionally invested, because every result mattered so much during those 4 years, that it felt a lot longer.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, half the time.
Like, it was as long as from the pandemic has been up until now, right?
That's right.
It was that long.
But that also feels like a long time.
No, I understand. But in many respects, because how the days went for several people, which was roll out of bed, hop on a Zoom, and rinse, repeat, nothing really fun.
Like Charlotte right now.
Yeah, like it also flew by.
Hey.
It crawled, but it flew by because you didn't have these experiences providing mile markers along the way. It's just pretty wild
thing,
to me.
Though, I do think that since 2018, the Celtics have been good enough where you get your hopes up. And so I think that this is a very scary place to be, where it's like, well, they should probably have won before and they should win this year. But given that they haven't won before when they should have won, there is just something that a pit in one's stomach, if one were to be a Celtics fan, I might say is somewhat how it feels, while at the same time, then I feel really dumb because they're really good. It's sort of psychological torture.
I did the whole psyche of Celtics fans, I find really interesting, because you have this history that a lot of Celtics fans hang their hat on. And Charlotte, I like you. You're my favorite of all the Celtics fans, but you've been alive.
Wow, Mike, sure, right now.
No, Charlotte, easily. But you've been alive for one champion. You've seen one championship.
So is Mike sure.
Of the Boston Celtics. You've seen them win as many NBA championships as the Toronto Raptors. And yet it is known that the Celtics are this prestige legacy franchise, a crown jewel of the NBA. But in your life, you don't really have anything to actually stand that up against.
She's got a Larry Bird t-shirt.
When you just said they've won as many as a Toronto Raptor, like,
yeah, right in the heart, right in the heart, Charlotte.
Because it's really important that Celtics fans are talked about as this prestige franchise, and it's a conversation from a bygone era. Well, it's like talking about a defunct ABA franchise.
We've talked about me and Charlotte talked about the ABA NBA mergers as should be the start of recorded history for the NBA. But before we let Charlotte go, I do want to ask her. Last night they did lose. DeJounte Murray has 44 points. He hits a game winner after he gets Porzingis switched on to him. After the game, Joe Mazzulla said, "I meant to do that because we need to practice switching. We haven't done it all year long, so we're going to use these games as experiments." So that was totally on purpose. Do you believe him?
No, absolutely not. What? That's like even weirder than trying to contest a Suns player's shot during a timeout. Yep. Like, no, you didn't, Joe, and that's okay. Just say we lost and we're going to be better. Don't. Oh God, this guy.
I think we should listen to Oddball.
Yeah, there it is.
Charlotte, thanks a lot. Oddball every day but Monday. Check it out on the DraftKings Network and also on YouTube and wherever you get podcasts. All right, Mike.
I was waiting for that Raptors barb to really get somebody the way that it got her.
Mike's been workshopping that for a while.
He has, yeah. But you finally found your landing spot.
No, it got her. Dagger right through the heart. I was really proud about that. That was wonderful.
Open up the club.
Don't you want to vamp?
No.
You don't want to vamp
we
some?
Can vamp?
I want to vamp some.
All right, let's vamp.
I want to get one thing off my chest because I'm really committing myself to this baseball thing. As you know, I'm a diehard Mariners fan. Yeah. Have been for a while now. And opening day was yesterday. Yeah. Really missed opportunity. I know an earlier game got rained out, but opening day is about, after you roll out of bed, I only got 3 hours to the first game. This is super exciting. Yeah. And you have, people get out of work. You take the kids out of school. That wasn't the case yesterday. You had all these evening starts, late afternoon starts. It didn't really feel like opening day. Most of the baseball was going on opposite of the tournament. It was weird.
Did either of you guys go to opening day yesterday?
I was there.
How was it, Billy?
It was good. It was a nice little crowd. Marlins blew a golden opportunity to win. Pirates do not know how to run the bases. Mm. Completely disastrous on the base pass all day long. Guys, I have an offer for all of you. We've been talking about, and it's a little late.
It is.
We've been talking about starting a fantasy baseball league in the office if anyone would like to join.
Wait a second.
I've already got one.
Okay.
The thing that I wanted to get off my chest, though, real quick, before we open up the club, because we don't have a lot of time to do any of that. These uniforms are a disaster, and it's been a talking point, but a lot of people are finally tuning in and watching these uniforms. I'm telling you, the grays don't match for a lot of these teams. And also, this was supposed to be dubbed as performance wear. Mm-hmm. That's why you have the different colored tones and whatnot. Have you seen the Yankees play baseball so far this season? They are sweating through their jerseys, making sweat stains everywhere. How could this be categorized as performance wear?
Costanza.
There's no moisture wicking. The grays don't match. The Angels simply should throw away their gray road tops because it doesn't match the pants. They should just exclusively wear the road reds. This is a real problem, and we've all seen Fight Club, and we know how recalls happen. Yeah. And they've decided that the hullabaloo around these uniforms isn't worth the trouble and the money that'll go into a recall. It looks cheap. It looks amateurish, and they're not going to fix it. And I can't believe that they're that stubborn.
Don Libertard.
How do people always go missing in the mountains? Don't go to the mountains. And by the way, I don't want to bring race into it. This is the most white people thing ever. Going missing in the middle of the mountains. It's the strangest thing. You go by yourself. You don't take a radio. You don't take a phone. You're missing for 4 days, and they find you like 10 years later covered in snow. And it's like, don't go by yourself. If you're going to go on a trail, don't go by yourself.
Stugatz.
Put it on the poll. Is it the whitest person thing ever, I believe is what you called it? Going into the woods by yourself. Is going into the woods by yourself.
I can't disagree with that, man.
I mean, so black people don't camp?
Yeah, black people don't hike. They don't camp. They don't go out into the woods.
This is the Don Libertar Show with the Stugatz.
Hello, welcome to the Hockey Show. My name is Roy Bellamy, David Drucker of the Hockey News. We got good news for you. The Florida Panthers have clinched a playoff spot.
Got the X.
Yeah, they got the X. We got bad news, though. They've lost 6 of the last 7. It's been a tough time. Obviously, it's been because of injury. But, I mean, my goodness. I mean, the Panthers, on time, I mean, for the big games, they played well. They played well versus the Rangers. They played well versus the Bruins. But,
yeah,
I mean, last night's game, they still came up short. Very close games. But last night's game against the Islanders and like it hasn't been a good situation for them, losing 6 out of the last 7. But let's go over the week that was for the Florida Panthers. Let's start on Saturday at the Garden. They lost in the shootout 4-3 to the New York Rangers. They did not have Alexander Barkov. They did not have Aaron Ekblad. Dmitry Kulikov was suspended, second game of that suspension, and
Forsling
Gus
also
Forsling.
Was yep. No, that's and this is another game. Like, the Panthers had a lead. They scored the first goal. Matthew Tkachuk got, I think they had a 2-0 lead actually in that game. The Rangers, and look, credit to the Rangers. They're an amazing team. They've got maybe the best goalie in the league right now, arguably. You and I kind of agree on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a tough time for the Panthers, and that was, look, I'd love to see the Panthers and the Rangers in a playoff series. Like, that yeah. game made me want that. And so did the Bruins game, actually.
I mean, yeah, I would love to see that as the conference final, hopefully.
Yes.
We'll see. Matthew Tkachuk scored the first goal in that game. It was good to see that. But eventually they ended up going down in a shootout.
Blown third period lead, a trend that we've seen a lot over the last week.
Way too many times. It was the first half of a back-to-back. They went to Philadelphia, and they won that game.
That was nice.
They did get back Kulikov, who served that suspension, though.
Yes.
But they did not have Barkov. They did not have Ekblad or Forsling.
Nope, but they did have goals from Sam Reinhart. They got a goal from Vladimir Tarasenko that game, and I believe Carter Verhaeghe scored in the third period, which he's done so often this season. And it was just nice to see the Panthers bounce back, because they played such a tough game in New York, and that was on the heels of them going through a really tough stretch where they'd been struggling. They had that really good effort at the Garden. The next day, you're like, oh, it's the day after. It's back-to-back. It's on the road. And no, they came out and played a really solid game in Philadelphia that made you think, okay, they're starting to come out of this.
All right. They came back home. They faced the Bruins. That was the big one.
Yes.
That was the one that we were all looking forward to. That was the one where they could have potentially gotten past the Bruins in the Atlantic Division, but that did not happen. They did get Barkov and Forsling back. There were some milestones in that game, David.
Yeah. What about that game? Let's see. The Panthers had a third period lead again.
Mm.
I believe that was the game where they took 2 third period penalties, including a delay of game by Evan Rodriguez that Paul Maurice was like, you're not going to eat a guy's lunch. Obviously, he doesn't mean to do something like that, but you cannot take 2 late penalties. In terms of the milestones, was that Barkov night?
No, Barkov night was against the Islanders. That was Etu Lucarainen.
That was Etu night. Right. He had the 3-game point streak. He had his 100th career point. And just talking about Etu Lucarainen, this is a guy who I think we're going to like in a Panther sweater for a while, just because he does so many things right on both ends of the ice. Him, Lundell, they're like little mini Barkovs out there. They've got the great guy to learn from. And yeah, you know this. We are big fans of Etu Lucarainen.
Oh, yeah. A lot of mistakes can be cleaned up when those guys are in the lineup. I failed to mention, by the way, Sam Reinhart got his 49th and 50th goals versus the Flyers.
How could we forget that?
I don't know.
We've been waiting for Reinhart to hit 50 for a while. Like, we knew that he was going to be the second Panthers player to hit 50 goals, like, after Pavel Bure did it twice.
Yeah.
But, man, what a great year Reinhart's having. Now, at this point, I am just eagerly awaiting how his contract situation plays out. Him and Florida want to get something done. They've had some talks, hasn't really picked up a lot from, I haven't heard much over the last month, but you'd think they want to get something done maybe before the summer, as Florida has with, they got it done with Forsling.
Yep.
So, you know, between Montour and Reinhart, the Panthers have a couple big free agents that they're going to have to deal with ahead of this playoff run that they're about to go on.
Back in the Bruins game, I wanted to particularly point something out that happened. The Panthers, as you said, blew that lead. They were up 3-2.
Yes.
At about 5:43 left in the third period in regulation, and Jordan McPherson of the Miami Herald pointed this out, the in-game entertainment crew played peppers. At 5:43 left in the third period, and then the Panthers immediately gave up 2 goals.
But you see, they've done this in the past, and it hasn't been a problem.
I don't know about that.
No, they've played peppers at the arena early, and now, I mean, look, this is kind of going, because it's a Miami Heat thing. Like, for those of you who aren't familiar, it's a Miami Heat thing. The Miami Heat played Pepas. They went on an incredible NBA Finals run, and it was super fun. The arena would go crazy, but it would happen with, like, a minute to go in a game that they were going to win. And it was like the victory song, the victory salute.
Yeah.
So the Panthers doing it a little early, I don't know. I get the apprehension, but they've done it before at the arena. I've heard it before. Early enough in a game that they haven't blown a lead. So I think maybe this is more of a product of a current funk than it is a poo-poo on Pepas.
Well, it is a poo-poo on Pepas. I'm blaming this poo-poo on Pepas. Last night, Not great. They played the Islanders, who right now are a desperate club right now. They are trying to get into the playoffs. They played themselves out. They're trying to get back in.
That was a big win for them.
Yeah, that was a huge win for them. The Panthers, for the past two games, including the Bruins game, had a chance to clinch a playoff spot. Basically, they needed help during the Bruins game. But by themselves last night, they could have made the playoffs, but they ended up losing 3-2 against the Islanders. That was also a milestone game. That one was for Alexander Barkov.
That was Barky game.
700 points. 700 points.
It's pretty unbelievable.
I mean, he's young. He's young. He started his career early, but he is young. He's already gotten 700 points in his career. And that's just amazing to me. But
it's pretty awesome. And this is, what, his fourth season with at least 50 assists, and he's got another 10 games to go?
Yeah, absolutely. The Panthers, following the game, ended up clinching a playoff spot, and that was because the Detroit Red Wings lost 4-0 to the Carolina Hurricanes. So thank you, Carolina, for that. So that's the week in Panthers hockey. Those four games, we saw that the Panthers scored first.
Yes, they
did. In all four of those games.
And third period leads.
Blown.
No, except for the one they won.
Except for the one they won in Philadelphia. But, yeah, that four straight games of them scoring first and them going 1-2-1, that's not Panthers hockey there.
Well, what we have to find out over the next 2.5 weeks is this a wake-up call that they, you know, is going to get them snapped into form ahead of the postseason starting, which is in just a few weeks, or the alternative, which I don't even want to say out loud. After the season that they've had, after the finals run they had last year, it looked like the stars were aligning. Everything was falling into place for the Panthers. So I don't even want to say out loud the alternative. Let's just say this is a funk for them, that they're going to wake up, they're going to learn what they need to learn, and they're going to go into the playoffs and do what they're going to do.
I just want to revel for the next 2 minutes on the fact that this is the fifth consecutive season that the Panthers have clinched a playoff spot.
Crazy.
Considering that for the first 25 years, they've had 5 playoff appearances before they ended up getting 5 straight in the past 5. I mean, my God. I mean, if you think about this as somebody who's cheered for this team for 30 years and who has covered this team for a very long time, it almost seems miraculous that they've gone to the playoffs or will go to the playoffs for a fifth consecutive season.
You have to almost take a step back, because being in it, because it's not just like we've been following teams since it started in 1993. We've covered the team pretty closely for over a decade now. But to kind of have to take a step back, because we've been so ingrained in it, like you just kind of broadly explained it. 5 playoff appearances in 25 years, and that included an 11-year gap where they made 0 playoffs, and that was when a lot of young fans were just kind of figuring out hockey in South Florida.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty remarkable. And I keep going back to the one thing. Like, it started with the ownership taking over in, what was it, 2011, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And hiring of Matt Caldwell, who's paid such meticulous attention to all the details. But for me, it was that and then Bill Zito.
Yeah.
Because Bill Zito getting hired in September of 2020 was really the catalyst that's made so many changes. The first moves he made, Patrick Hornquist, Radko Gudas. And from that, it just set the culture. It set a tone. And it's been this amazing, like, just focus on exceptional, not just players, but people. Bringing in not just good guys at hockey, but guys that are good in the locker room. It's made this incredible, incredible team. Yeah, you just got to take a step back and revel in it, Roy.
Patrick Williams of NHL.com, he's their American Hockey League reporter. He is coming up next, and we're going to go into what's going on in the minor league system of the NHL. That's coming up next.
Don Lebatard.
Let's go, Islanders. Bump, bump. Bump, bump, bump.
Stugats.
Let's go, Islanders. Bump, 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 bump.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugats.
All right, joining us right now is Patrick Williams. He writes about the American Hockey League for NHL.com. And right now, the AHL is getting closer and closer to their playoffs. So let's start there. How does the playoff picture look right now in the AHL, Patrick?
Well, you know, it's funny because it's such a complicated system. You know, the four divisions are kind of three different formats for who qualifies and who doesn't, and there's byes involved. The long story short is 23 out of the 32 teams make it The idea being NHL teams want their prospects to get playoff experience as much as possible. So it was, you know, a pretty low bar to qualify. Take, for example, like, you know, the Charlotte Checkers, who are Florida's affiliate, they're third place right now in the Atlantic Division. So they're sitting pretty quite nicely, you know, in terms of their playoff positioning. But with this league, it's a league of streets. I say that all the time. And, you know, depending on who's called up, who's sent down, you know, teams can kind of go on good runs, or slumps very quickly.
And those are obvious variables, the players getting called up for playoff runs for the NHL teams. But based on that, who has the best odds to win the Calder Cup this year?
Well, you know, at this point, you'd have to say the Hershey Bears. They've run away with the entire league. They're 14 points ahead of the second overall team. They're right on the line right now of potentially setting the record for best point percentage in league history. It's a record that's stood for 32 years now. They need a little bit of a run here toward the end, but they're at 770 right now. The league record is 775, so they have a good shot to do that. They're the defending cup champs as well, so right now, you know, you have to give the edge to them, at least you know, as it stands at the moment.
So, Patrick, real quick, I wanted to ask if you could break down, because the AHL, the way that they construct their rosters is a little bit different, obviously, than they do in the NHL. You kind of alluded to it before, that teams like to have their prospects getting playoff experience, and so much of AHL rosters are built of those development-type players. So if you could just kind of break it down real quick for us before we dive further into it.
Well, yeah, for one, there's no limit, like, you know, unlike in the NHL, where it's a... You know, you have your 23 players, and, you know, there's cap considerations. There's no cap consideration. There's only your budget, essentially, and there's no limit to number of personnel. So those are the two big differences. The other big differences are that quite often late in the season, you'll see players that come over from Europe or either from junior or college. So you can sometimes get some, you know, real big additions to your lineup late in the season. I mean, I think of a team like Cleveland a number of years ago. They added Zach Werenski right out of the University of Michigan late in the season. He came right in and was one of their top defensemen. They won the cup that year. So, you know, there's a lot more volatility in terms of the rosters. You know, and you can be a team that looks maybe like a borderline playoff team, but say your NHL team misses the playoffs and you get three or four players that are sent down. All of a sudden that changes, you know, the whole look of your team, and vice versa. You know, you can be a team that has been sailing along, and all of a sudden the NHL team calls up, you know, a couple of your key players, and there go your playoff chances. So it's a much different dynamic than what we see in the NHL.
Who right now in the league do you see who can get called up for a playoff run, who can absolutely change the entire scope of that team's playoffs? Oof.
That's a good question. I mean, depending on kind of what you want. I mean, we've seen goalies come up in the past, like Connor Ingram a couple years ago, came up from the AHL, went up to Nashville, and kind of, at least for a little while, was kind of the hot story of the playoffs. So you can sometimes see a goalie do that. You know, earlier I would have said Logan Stankoven from Dallas. He was running away with the scoring title with the Texas Stars, but he has been called up, so you know, he's a guy that's probably was the most NHL ready player in the entire league, just a player that you know, quickly became obvious that he was ready. There was really no further development needed.
So I did want to talk to you about another goaltender in the AHL who has been on fire lately. I don't think he's got he's a candidate to get called up just the way that the Panthers situation is right now, but Spencer Knight has been en fuego for the Charlotte Checkers, who have also been on a nice little streak. As you mentioned, AHL teams going on streaks. Spencer's won, I think, 9 of his last 10 starts. He's got shutouts in 3 of his last 4, and Charlotte has been creeping their way up the Eastern Conference standings as well. Just in terms of, you know, AHL, how well he's been playing, what have you seen, and how impressive has that been?
You know, like, you know, obviously he had that well-documented, you know, situation where he had to, you know, step back and, you know, work on some things off the ice. Clearly he did that, and, like, which was the first
first step for him to kind of get that that part of his life squared away. He came back this year, went to the AHL. You know, he was up and down a little bit early on, but, you know, I think one of the biggest differences you just see is just, like, his approach to the entire game. Like, you know, he's just – he's got that maturity to his game, the sense of, you know, you see with a lot of young goalies, that first – year or two of their career at the pro level. I mean, they've had success everywhere. And in his case, he even had success at the NHL level. So, you know, you come down and it's a much more chaotic type of style down in the AHL. You have a lot more younger players. The systems aren't quite as tight. So for a goalie, that can be really tough. And, you know, I think it took him a little bit of time to make that adjustment to what was going on around him on the ice, but he clearly has done that. And obviously now Charlotte is really starting to ride his hot streak. And, you know, their team, you know, if you ask around the league, their team nobody wants to see in the first, second round of the playoffs. I mean, their team, I think that could be a very dangerous opponent, especially with the way the format is. You get either a best of three or a best of five early on in the playoffs. So, you know, your playoff hopes can go off track very quickly in a short series like that, especially with a hot goalie like Knight.
Continuing to look at the checkers right now, I assume the Panthers are going to call up Mackie Samuskevich. But the entire roster, if you look at it from a whole, who do you think the Panthers are going to call up for this playoff run?
Yeah, you know, I mean, for one, the question becomes like, you know, how many players do you want to call up versus, you know, what you're trying to do at the AHL level? Typically, a team will let the AHL level or the roster kind of be what it is until the AHL team's playoff postseason is over. And then they, you know, you'll see like last year with the Panthers, they brought up, you know, a whole group of players that were, you know, kind of come in there and, you know, sort of on reserve. Zach Galifi was kind of the breakthrough player, the story last year where, you know, he broke into the lineup and actually ended up really becoming kind of a regular down the stretch there, you know, into the Stanley Cup finals for the Panthers. So, I think for the most part, a team like the Panthers, you know, they've constructed a pretty typical AHL type roster where you have your mix of good, solid veteran guys. And then obviously like prospects like Samuskevich and Knight, players like that. And then kind of those guys that are, you know, the glue guys in between that kind of hold everything together. So, I think for right now, they would probably more or less stand pat. But certainly if Charlotte goes out early and Florida is playing later, you'll see a whole group of them called up, you know, guys like Samuskevich, Knight, et cetera.
It's something we've seen with the Charlotte Checkers the last couple of years that's pretty common across the AHL. I wanted to ask you about is most recently Charlotte signed Ben Steves from Minnesota Duluth as a, you know, college player. They get their ELC. He signed with Florida, but his ELC doesn't kick until next year, so he took a PTO with Charlotte to be with their AHL club to learn their systems and to get acclimated to pro hockey. Last year, we saw the same thing with Mackie Samuskevich and Ryan McAllister. Mm-hmm. Just in terms of the way that the process is to go from like a college player getting, you know, dipping their toe into the pro game. How common is this in the AHL, and how much of an impact does this have because it's happening just as playoff time is getting started?
Yeah, it's a potentially a huge impact. Samuskevich, I mean, certainly showed, you know, a lot of promise, which you would expect in a top prospect like him. But, you know, he came in. I thought it was great for his development. Like I spoke with him earlier in the season, and, you know, like it just gave him a taste of what he would expect long term. You know, he had something to work with when he went into the summer, you know, into his offseason training program. Kind of had a sense of like, okay, this is what I'm up against in the AHL, to say nothing of what I'll, you know, have to deal with eventually, you know, full time in the NHL. So it's a chance for a player to kind of dip their toe in the waters, get a sense of what they're up against, get to know some of the coaching staff better, get to know teammates, get playoff experience. Certainly, that's very helpful. You know, he got a little bit, you know, Samuskevich last season. So it's almost like, I guess I would almost compare it to like kind of an internship where, you know, where you're probably getting hired full time later on. But you know, this is just a chance to really kind of learn the business on the ground, and be kind of fully immersed in what the AHL team, and by extension what the NHL team, wants him to be doing.
Much like the NHL, the AHL has individual awards. The Les Cunningham Award is league MVP. The Red Garrett Award is Rookie of the Year. The Bass Bastian Award goes to the best goaltender, and the Eddie Shore Award goes to best defenseman. Who do you think will win those four trophies this year?
Well, yeah, you know, MVP, you know, it might be, you know, a former name that's probably familiar for a lot of Florida fans is Rocco Grimaldi. Good, solid veteran. Team he's with, Chicago, has struggled quite a bit. They're an interesting group because they're not affiliated. But, you know, he's kind of put that team, you know, on his back. Adam Gaudet, you know, a guy that's kind of been a bubble guy for another for a number of years. It's he's with the St. Louis system right now. He's right up there, you know, among the top league-leading goals. So those would be kind of my two early, I guess, MVP picks. Rookie of the Year, I mean, even though he's been up for a month now, Stan Coben, I think you have to go with. You know, Goalie of the Year, I mean, depending on kind of – the Goalie of the Year can be a little more complicated just because typically if you get really hot, like, you're going up. Yeah. But I'll go with, you know, a first rounder like Yaroslav Askarov in Milwaukee. He's probably one of the future, you know, people in net for the Nashville Predators. And then, you know, as far as a, you know, just a top defenseman, like, you know, it's probably more likely than not kind of a veteran guy, like, you know, like a Brad Hunt in Colorado. He's 35 years old. He's one of those classic veteran guys, you know, obviously on the back end of his career, but, you know, the Colorado Avalanche have him down there both to be a leader and also, you know, because at the AHL level, he's still a top-notch player. So, you know, he would be my pick for your Eddie Shore top defenseman.
Patrick, you mentioned Hershey earlier, just the great season they're having, and they're a team that often has a very successful season in the AHL. And you see, you see certain teams that always seem to do well, whether it's Hershey or a team like Providence. And I know that a lot of that has to do with how they're funded. And I just wanted to kind of ask you to dive into that a little bit on why how the teams that are, you know, a bit better funded in the AHL can go so much further.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's no cap. First of all, so you're not really restricted in that sense. You're only really restricted by your budget. And those teams you mentioned, Providence and Hershey, for one, they're in very good, stable affiliations. I mean, Providence and Boston, for example, have been together since 1992, Hershey and Washington 2005. And it starts with a lot of commitment on the part of the NHL team to be willing to kind of fund those veteran players. And veterans drive a lot of success in the league. I mean, you have obviously your first, second round picks. Those guys are going to go on to long-term NHL careers, you hope. But, you know, they come in, they're 20 or 21 years old. They have a lot to learn. So they don't necessarily come in and dominate right away. It's your veterans that kind of like pull a lot of the weight. So teams like Providence, you look at Hershey, that's a great example. Syracuse with Tampa Bay is another example. They've always really invested in those veterans. And, you know, if you're an AHL veteran, like the money, it's not what, you know, what people think of typically as minor league salaries. I mean, the money is very good down. I mean, if you're a top vet, like you can make, let's say, 450 and up to around maybe 575. So like the money's really good. Like it's not NHL money, obviously, but, you know, it's certainly not money you're going to get in most walks of life. So certainly if you're a veteran and you can also set yourself up down the road, you know, like, if you know, maybe eventually you want to transition into coaching or management. It's a real good pathway for guys, you know, around 30 years old or so, who are maybe starting to look long term toward their post-playing career. But in the meantime, they can still, you know, pocket $500,000 a year playing in the minors. So it's not a bad arrangement for those guys.
Patrick Williams is the American Hockey League reporter for NHL.com. Patrick, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.